Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. On today's program, we'll go back and talk about one of the things that used to be all over America. We had it here in Nicholasville and Jessamine County too. The milkman. He would bring milk to your door. You'd wake up in the morning, open your door, and there would set your dairy products for the day or the week. We're going to be talking to J.D. Wells, who was a distributor and the milkman here in Nicholasville for Southern Bell Dairy for many years. We'll get his recollections about that and more right after this word from the Farmers Bank.
Beginnings are important, especially when it comes to building a future. From start to finish, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County will be with you every step of the way. Whether it's a house, a car, a college fund, or saving for retirement, it all starts here. Stop by any of our four convenient Jessamine County locations today or visit us on the web at myfarmersbank.net. Banking with friends and neighbors, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you on this Saturday morning as we continue to learn more about people, places, and things of Jessamine County. With me today, we're going to be talking to a fellow. I've been here all his life and his family been here for a long time. We're going to get some history of that family. One of the reasons we want to talk to this guy is because he was the milkman at one time here in Jessamine County. He and a couple of other fellows. We're going to talk specifically about his route and other things he did too. Good morning, J.D. Wells. How are you this morning?
Fine, Doug. And you?
Well, doing all right. Glad you could come and be with us today.
Good to be here.
You know, we were on our Facebook page, our You Grew Up in Jessamine County. There has been topics come up about the way things used to be. And one of the things that used to be that I guess you can't find anywhere anymore, maybe some remote town somewhere in the United States, but not around here. And that is the delivery of milk, the way it used to be. Now, there are listeners in our program who have no clue what we're talking about. As far as they're concerned, we're talking about a big semi with a picture of a milk jug on the side that rolls up to our local grocery store and dumps the milk. But back years ago, things were different, and we're going to talk about that and how you were involved with that. But I think first, the first thing we need to do is talk about your family, the Wells family. Tell us about your parents, who they were, where they came from, and how they got here.
Well, Doug, I have been told that my family, maybe two or three generations back, came from West Virginia into East Tennessee and then on into Central Kentucky. Mm-hmm. My mother was Ruby Jenkins from Richmond. My father was Roy Wells from Richmond. We came to Jessamine 2 years before I was born, which would have been 29. So I've grown up here in the county. I lived through the Depression. I'm still living through one. And from a large family. My father passed away when I was 6 years old, left 8 children at home.
Wow.
The oldest and 18 years old and lived on a 200-acre farm,
yeah.
20 acres of tobacco in the barn. Nobody knew anything about farming. All my mother knew was having babies and cooking and cleaning.
Your dad did all the farming.
Right. But we made it.
Now, name your brothers and sisters.
Okay. The oldest one was Lillian Mobley. She married Earl Mobley. Then Harold, Shorty, the bread man. Then James, Jim. And then Charles. And then Isabel, mm-hmm. married Ray Brumfield. Jewel, Roy, Laverne, me, J.D., and Marjorie. That's 10.
So you were the next to last.
Next to the youngest.
So by the time you came along, you had, it's kind of like my grandmother's family. You know, there was a bunch of them kids, but by the time the youngest one came along, the oldest ones were, well, in her case, the oldest one was married and pregnant. You had older brothers and sisters that almost were probably on their own by the came along. Yeah.
The farm we lived on, Dr. Bascom Harris owned it, mm-hmm. and they had two tenant houses on it, and my oldest sister lived in one, and one of the brothers went to live with him
when my
father passed away.
So you were raised up on this farm. Your mother, she got you guys through it somehow, and you went on. So I guess, were you at Nicksville High?
Yes.
And once you got out of high school, what was all about life for you then?
The first job I had was driving a magazine delivery truck, Doug, and it didn't last long. Mm-hmm. I went to work for Berea College Bakery and Dairy. I've been in milk about half my life so far. So I worked for them for, I think, 14 years till they sold out. Then John Rankin gave me a job at Dixievale Dairy in Lexington.
Now, were these jobs right out of high school?
Yes.
You didn't go to college?
No.
Did you serve in the military?
No.
Straight to work and doing this?
So that was from the beginning. That's all we knew.
Right. Now, at what point, I don't want to miss her, at what point in time did your family start within that period? Had you worked a while before that started?
My family?
Yes.
Yes, I married in 1952.
Okay. So you were working, I guess, in Lexington at that time. Okay, at that
dairy.
Working
Dixie Bell Dairy.
And while we're on the subject, tell us how many kids you have.
Well, it's a little joke I use. My wife and I were in our second marriage.
Right.
We each had three when we married, and we have one between us.
Yeah.
So I tell everyone, she has four, and I have four. We have seven altogether.
Kind of like the Brady Bunch, wasn't it?
Right.
Yeah. So who are your three that you brought to the marriage?
Jeffrey Wales.
Right.
Jennifer Wales Lane.
Yeah.
And Michael Dudley. Michael's the director of human resources and her leader.
Okay. Then Ginger, or some people I know her as Ginger, Jenny, she goes to Virginia. Is that her real name?
No, her real name is Jenny.
It's Jenny. She brought three.
She had Richard.
Right.
David.
Yeah.
And Jimmy.
And Jimmy.
Jimmy
and
is the same age as my youngest, and Michael Dudley.
And then you together had
one.
John Paul Wells. Okay. So that kind of talks about the family and who they are and where they are. So you're
having pretty well confused by now.
Well, that's right. And they can replay the show if they need to try to figure it out.
Most of them know.
You are in Lexington. So you go to work up there and I guess driving a milk truck. Now, give us a typical day. From start, you wake up in the morning and tell us what happens.
Wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning, grab a Mountain Dew and hit the road. Get to Lexington, start delivering milk at 4 o'clock in the morning. And by 10, 11 o'clock, you were through with your day's work there. But then I had a small home improvement business of my own.
Yeah.
I did every house that Henry Thompson built in Edgewood for years, 10 years.
So you go to Lexington with this empty truck, and I assume you'd roll up to the...
No. The truck belonged to Dixieville then.
Okay. But in the mornings, you take that truck and you roll up to Dixie Bell and they start loading, or you start loading whatever you need for the day. Is that how it works?
I did that the day before.
That's the day before.
When you finish your route, you go in and load for the next day.
Okay.
And you book the refrigeration up on the truck.
All right.
Next morning, it's ready to roll.
So at that time, in those years, how did you know what to put on that truck? I'm trying to get the process of how it used to work.
Well, it's memory more than anything, Doug.
So people, you kind of knew their order.
Everybody had a standing order, yeah.
So if I was on your route and I looked at you and I said, tell you what, I need 3 gallons of whole milk every week. And was it just milk? Or did you do butter and all that stuff?
Anything you need in the dairy.
Anything in dairy. So I need 3 jugs of milk. I need, and back then, was it jug? I guess it was glass. Was it glass?
Glass.
Glass bottles.
Southern Bell, after I went with them, they pioneered the plastic jug.
So we're ordering glass bottles. Were they pints, quarts? What? How big were those bottles?
We had a gallon, had a half gallon, and a quart.
And I tell you, that's what I want every week. And I want you to bring me a pound of butter. And I want some, did you do ice cream?
No.
Okay, so I want some cottage cheese, maybe. And every week, or whenever it was, you'd show up at my house and deliver this.
So in January the 1st in 1967, I would set a gallon of milk at your front door in a non-returnable jug for 89 cents.
89 cents brought to you.
That's right.
Now, prior to the non-returnables, the glass, those were returnable. So I guess if I used 3 quarts of milk, I'd put the empty glass on the porch and you'd pick it up and put and replace it.
Mm-hmm.
That was a job.
Yes, it was. We had a little rack on the back of our trucks. These trucks were, you stood up to drive them. You didn't lose any time getting in and out. And they had a rack on the back. When you got an empty case, you took it around and put it in that rack. And put your empties in it when you pick them up at the home to keep them interfering when you're getting fresh milk out.
So I guess the empties you take back at the end of the day, and the dairy cleans them up, washes them, uses them over, and that's how
that's
it is.
Right.
Did they have the paper caps?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I have several of those right now.
And like I say, there's people listening to us that has no clue what we're talking about.
None.
Absolutely
none.
You know, at that time, J.D., this town wasn't very big.
I'm sorry?
At that time, this town wasn't big.
No, it wasn't.
And you could just about, were you the only quote-unquote milkman in town? Did we have others?
Well, my good friend Grover Rupert was already here.
Okay.
And in fact, he worked for Dixieville, too.
Yeah.
So we got along fine. We didn't have any problems. He'd bring me extra milk if I ran short. Mm-hmm. I'd bring him extra milk. We just worked together and got along.
The way it should be.
That's right.
Now, where did he work? You said
he worked with the Dixieville,
so too. The same company.
Uh-huh.
You got
He was with some other dairy. I forgot what it was before he went to Dixieville.
Now, you said later, did you stay with Dixie the whole time?
No, I worked for him 5 years before I started my own business.
And how did you do? What made you decide to do that?
Well, I thought I was making the company a lot of money for all the milk I delivered in Lexington. And I just decided, well, I'm going on this on my own.
Yeah.
So I talked to the men there. I was about ready to go with Dean's.
Uh-huh.
And Les Bryant talked me out of it. He taught me going to Southern Bell, which is the best thing I ever did. So when Les and I went to Somerset to talk to Ralph Shearer, he was the president of Southern Bell, and he didn't talk. He just sat there and listened to us for about half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And finally he said, well, gentlemen, think about this. This young man's got a family. He's going to start him a business from scratch. Why don't we just give him $250 a week to start out with? That's the way I got started. And I had around 300 retail customers and 10 or 12 wholesale.
So basically, did most people just call you and say, I need you to start bringing me milk? Is that just kind of how it was? Is a word of mouth type thing?
That's right. Word of mouth of quality and promptness.
Yeah.
On time delivery.
And that's the thing. People wanted that at a certain time, didn't they?
But you wanted to make sure you didn't go out and put that milk on your front porch if the temperature was below freezing.
Yeah, or I guess too hot. Yeah.
I learned a good lesson at Dixieville one morning. I went out, and it was just about 30 degrees. And about 2 hours, they started calling me, and I had to go back on my route. And that milk had frozen and come up to the top, pushed that cap out of that jug, and I set those gallons of milk on everybody's front porch with milk run up about a foot tall and froze.
Well, what would you do in a situation like that?
That's the way to warm up. Well, we did finally take a policy. We'd ring the doorbell when we'd leave your milk.
Okay.
But I know you've seen the insulated boxes that sit on the front porch.
Yes. Yeah, and so you just set it down in those boxes, mm-hmm. and that would keep it for a while, or keep it from freezing, or I guess going
right,
bad, either one.
Freeze.
So at what point in time, now, and you showed me, you brought in some old Jessamine journals, and one of them you brought shows an ad that you ran in 1967. Is that John Paul?
Yes, sir.
John Paul, he couldn't have been, well, what, 6 months, 8 months old? Yeah. But anyway, he's sitting on a table, and those are in cartons. When did that happen? When did we start seeing paper cartons and jugs rather than glass?
Along about that time, because I had a business meeting one time, I made a remark about the carton.
Mm-hmm.
And the man that designed that carton was the vice president of Southern Bell. And he kind of got his feathers ruffled a little when I said something about the carton.
Yeah.
But all I wanted was a little more of a, I didn't want to change the design or anything.
Right.
I just wanted a little more sturdy carton.
Yeah, right.
Because when it warmed up a little, those cartons softened up and they...
Well, and now, and of course, I don't know, can you even find paper cartons anymore?
I don't think so.
I remember them very well, and it seemed like they had almost a slight film of wax on
them. Right.
And I guess that's to keep...
That's my point.
So they could be sturdy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You didn't get any royalties
for
that,
I did. No. The man that I was talking about got his feathers ruffled over the design. A machine broke down in the dairy in Somerset, and we could have got it, or they could have got it delivered to Louisville the next morning, but he had to fly to Boston and get it himself.
Yeah.
And he and another vice president flew into the side of a West Virginia mountain.
Oh,
never
no.
Never saw him again. Well,
really?
They recovered their bodies.
Oh, gracious sakes. And they're the ones, he's the one that came up with the design for this, which was
J.D. McAlpin.
All over everywhere. Do you have any idea, and were you still in the business when plastic came along?
Oh, yes. Southern Bell started a plastic jug.
Was it just more cost efficient? Is that why they did it?
Right.
Anymore? Is Southern Bell still in business?
No.
They went out. Now, I'm assuming that once this took place, once you went on your own, Mr. Rupert was probably still with Southern Bell.
Yes.
So you, at that time, I guess, were you then the only locally self-operated that we had?
Yes, 13 years.
Yeah. What made you decide that's enough?
I was paying 40 cents a gallon for gas, and every week you'd go up a couple of cents, and I could see the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
Now, there are two young gentlemen in Boston just recently tried to start this same kind of business, but it didn't last. You can't do it, Doug, with the prices the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
this day and time.
You know, you were saying early in this interview, you were talking about a gallon was, what, 89 cents? Mm-hmm. And you know, there are some times that you can find gallons on sale now for $1.89 or something. And really, when you think about it, that's not too big of a jump for all these years compared to other foods.
That's right.
Milk is still somewhat inexpensive, I guess.
I guess it depends on where you buy it, Doug.
Yeah. Is it volume? Is that what causes that?
Yes. There's no delivery of dairy products anymore.
Yeah.
Well, Mike Meese has a distributorship for Dean's. He's got two or three tractor trailers. I think even those, they have all the dollar stores, Speedway, the contract to them. And Kroger, of course, Kroger has a bottling plant in Winchester. They bottle their own. There's just no milk delivery trucks on the road anymore.
When you were in this business from the very start until you decided that's enough, what did you enjoy the most about it?
Meeting the people.
Yeah, I figured that's what you might say.
Well, I'll get to that a little later on when we go a little further down the line, but go ahead.
That's okay. You go. You just keep talking about that. Because the reason I bring that up is I've interviewed some people that were mailmen and different things, and it seems like that's a reoccurring theme, is the work is okay, but it's who you get to meet. And in a small town, you pretty much knew everybody you saw right back then.
I'll tell you a little story. I lived over here on 3rd Street, and Joanne Staten lived 6 houses down and did some babysitting for us. But Johnny Lanham did my uniform laundry. Then I would stop by, and Johnny stopped by, the postman to stop by, and Joanne says one day, I wonder what's going on up at that house. I see the milkman come, stay a while, the bread man come, stay a while. You got to where my children, when I'd come in, they'd say, Mama, here comes the milkman.
Well, you know, you just mentioned something there that we need to tell people, especially younger people. It wasn't just milk that was delivered to people's doors.
No.
Talk about, as in that time, in that era, growing up, but even when you were in this, what other products could you get at your home?
Well, we had Donaldson Bakery here for quite a while. In the old City Hall, the old power plant building.
I don't remember. I remember it talked about it.
They delivered bakery products to the home.
Now, that said, so people will know, right across from the current police station is the Nicholasville City Building. It's got the big smokestack beside it, and that's where the bakery was.
That's right.
Not in that particular building, but on that site.
Well, it was the distribution point.
Yeah, and they deliver bread to your home.
Mm-hmm.
So the same way you get milk every day or every other day or whenever, you got bread.
Yep.
The same way. Was there anything else other than mail that you can think of?
I don't know. Probably. Well, we had Watkins products.
Yeah.
Raleigh products.
And that's everything from cleaners to the Fuller Brush
you
Man.
Name
everybody's
it,
heard
they
of
have
that.
It.
Yeah, right. So back in those days, we've often talked on this program about how families would get together on Saturdays and come to town to go get the groceries. And one of the reasons is because back then, a lot of your stuff that you needed for your house, you bought at your doorstep.
See, Doug, that's the way we lived. Before I was old enough to know it, my father had a contract with Phil Clements. We milked cows, and my mother bottled the milk, and we brought it to town to Phil Clements' store down here, and we traded for beans, flour, sugar. We raised cabbage. We raised potatoes. We raised beans, tomatoes. My mom canned all that. Mm-hmm. That's the way we lived.
Mm-hmm. You had to.
That was just a way of life.
That's the way it was.
If you wanted to eat.
Yeah, right.
If you didn't want to eat, you didn't have to.
You know, nowadays, my wife does it, and she's somewhat young, but canning is kind of a lost art. It's getting to be. It's kind of like quilting. You know, there's certain things. You've still got people that can do it, but those people are getting fewer and fewer all the time.
My wife did it for 10, 12 years. She'd work at university all day long, come home, can tomatoes, make pickles, when I had my little farm down on Crenshaw.
And it's a lot of work.
Yeah, but it's all.
But it's worth it.
It's worth it. It's worth every penny of it. You remember hog killing time?
Oh, yeah.
We would go with Charles Miller and my cousin Lonnie, and our family would all get together and kill hogs. 12, 15. My mother would can sausage, tenderloin. Of course, we cured up the hams and the shoulders.
Right.
It's just a way of life. We didn't know any different.
That's right.
Everybody lived that way then.
And you mentioned 10 or 12 families. They all pitched in, and they got enough that would last them for a long time.
Absolutely.
And they helped each other. you know, they divided it up and they helped each other.
That's right.
And that's, you're right. That is lost. And that's one of the sad things, I think, that we don't know about. And a lot of people in our listening audience were just born in an era where you just didn't have that.
Well, in today's society and economy, nobody has time for it anymore.
Right. So what year did you get out of the milk delivery business?
I think I sold it in 86.
Is that when you retired, or did you keep
going? No.
What'd you do then?
I worked at the university for 14 years.
And doing what?
Security for the College of Agriculture.
Oh, yeah.
Worked at night.
Did you like that?
It was interesting. Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah. Very,
but you said you were going to get to this later on. The most enjoyment I ever had in all my work in 85 years, I drove a school bus for 15 years.
Yes, I remember.
The last 5 years I drove it, I loved it better than anything I ever did.
How come?
Because I knew the grandparents and the parents of these children.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had a problem on the bus, I sent a note home. And next morning, the parent was at the bus stop and the problem was ended.
Times different, aren't they? You know, I remember when I was growing up, J.D., Joe Briner drove my bus out Union Mill Way. You remember Joe used to have Briner's store down at Surfwell, worked for the post office.
Very well.
Joe, one of the nicest, very quiet.
Good man.
Very good fella. But I can remember, we had a couple of families on our route that they were always nice to me, but they were a little rough. And they, every once in a while, would be a little mischievous and get in a little trouble on the bus. And I can remember Mr. Briner, you know, back then, you could do this, folks. He'd pull over there at Stinnett's Grocery right there before Mackey Pike, and he'd tell those young men, now, you got two choices. You settle down or you just get off the bus and walk home. And their mama would come pick them up and probably give them a good thrashing.
If you have an unruly student on your bus and you decide that you want to get him off, nowadays you have to go to a suitable, safe place on the highway.
Yeah.
Call us, Director of Transportation. He sends someone in the vehicle out and picks his child up and takes him home.
Yeah. And, of course, nowadays our highways are a whole lot more dangerous than they were back when I'm talking about. Yeah, the traffic alone is dangerous it's almost dangerous to drive anything on, let alone be walking.
I had a school bus driver. I don't think you would know him, Everett Morgan. If you looked up in that mirror and he was looking back at you, it's too late because you were already in trouble. And he'd put you off in a half minute.
Yeah. Well, and you said something there when you talked about that being enjoyable, that is key. That was during a time where you did know everybody's grandparents and parents. The town was small enough that you could do that.
Right.
And back then, kids had a lot of eyes on them. And it was just that all these parents knew you from all these communities, and they were watching, and they knew your mama, and they knew your daddy, and they didn't mind saying, listen, you need to settle down a little bit. That's just, it took a village to raise a child. That's the way it was.
That's right.
The village raised them all.
Well, my mother was a very, very strict disciplinarian. She had to be.
Yeah.
And I knew that if I got in trouble on that school bus, that I was in more trouble when I got home.
Sure.
So I didn't cause much problem.
Yeah.
I knew better.
So you worked at the university. You finally retired from there.
My wife and I, Ginger, both retired there in June of 2001.
And what you been doing ever since?
I don't know how I had time to hold a job, Doug. My mother-in-law, bless her heart, passed away. And my wife wanted her home, and we needed it. We'd done good up in years. We couldn't handle that big two-leveled house. So we bought it. And I told her, if you'll let me have my own little shop in the backyard, you can do whatever you want to, or I'll do whatever you want to with the rest of it. I believe I'm busier now than I was when I had a regular job.
Woodworking. Right?
Woodworking for my grandchildren.
Yeah. That's good.
One of them sees a quilt rack. Oh, Granddaddy, can you make me one of those? One of them sees an American flag out of tobacco stick. Oh, I'd like to have one of those.
Sure.
All right, now I'm building some shelves for Bethany Church.
Yeah.
Out of the original benches that came from that church.
And you were telling me your mom was a deacon there?
My mother was the first female deacon in
Christian Church, which is still going strong today. Well, you've seen a lot of changes in your life. You know that, J.D.
Yeah, I have.
You have. If you look back, and you mentioned that you all moved here right after the Depression, I guess. Well, no, before the Depression. You were here during it. From then until the way things are done now, whether it's delivering milk or bread or whatever, woodworking, anything. You've seen a lot of changes. This town, look how it's changed.
Do you think my mother would believe Orchard Subdivision? John Watts' farm up here.
It's one of the questions that we've talked about on this program is if your mom or dad, if they could come back for 5 minutes, what would they say? They'd be amazed, wouldn't they?
They would say, what happened to Millerville, Millertown up here?
Yeah, yeah, right. What happened to Miller Flats? What happened to Nicholasville in itself? A lot different than it used to be.
I don't know whether you remember or not, but where Bill Hale Mackey lived out on Union Mill.
Yeah,
there,
yeah.
There used to be a stone marker right there and a sign, Nicholasville, population 1,200.
Yeah. The one I remember at that same point, a little bit more than that, it was 7,400 for a long, was that right, or 4,700? I'm trying to think, but forever and ever, it just seemed like it didn't go anywhere. And then all of a sudden, boom, and now we have in the whole county about 40,000 people. Be hard to deliver milk today, wouldn't it? Couldn't get it done.
No.
It'd be a hard job.
It would be a hard job.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming in. Our time is over, believe it or not. It goes quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
But it's nice to have memories like this and to learn about the way it used to be. Because as we have said, there's a lot of people that listen to our station, you know, under 35, 40 years old. They don't remember these kind of things that used to happen like this. And the fact that you'd wake up in the morning and open your door and there would sit in glass bottles the milk that you would have for the day or a loaf of bread or whatever it is. Times have certainly changed, and those times, even though that sounds like a hard life, it was a more relaxed life. I don't know that in some ways it was a whole lot easier.
I'd go back in a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Thanks. I wouldn't have any problem with it.
Sure. Well, we appreciate you coming in. Thank you for sharing with us today.
Thank you, Doug. Pleasure was mine.
My thanks to J.D. Wells for coming in and talking about how it was to have a milkman come to your door. We appreciate you coming to our door every Saturday morning at 11 here on All Things Jessamine. We'll do it again next week on Jess FM 105.9.
In 1934, a brand new house cost about $6,000. The cost of a gallon of gas was 10 cents. And in 1934, Farmers Bank of Jessamine County opened their doors at 200 North Main Street in Nicholasville, and they've been there ever since. The times may have changed, but Farmers Bank is still here, still proud to be the only locally owned and locally operated bank in Jessamine County. Banking with friends and neighbors. Farmers Bank, Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.